Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
And welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Andrea Catalano be telling us a little bit about some of the recent successes of the Learning Disabilities Association of Windsor Essex. So, can you tell me about some of the recent happenings with the Learning Disabilities Association?
Yeah, so this year we have run all of our programs virtually, and so it wasn't something we were expecting. We were expecting to get back in person, but that didn't happen. So we ended up running all of our programs online. We are currently running online one-on-one tutoring, our Reading Buddies program, and we've also ran this year our social skills program online.
So, in terms of the tutoring, curious about that. For someone with a learning disability, what are some of the strategies you try to teach?
And so, with our one-on-one tutoring, we use Ontario Certified Teachers, so they are all OCTs, and they all go through our training as well. So they are trained understanding learning disabilities and ADHD and how that affects each child's learning. So each child's learning plan with their tutors is different to support that child's needs during that time.
So, what types of learning disabilities are most common in these programs?
In these programs with learning disabilities, we see dyscalculia and dysgraphia, as well as dyslexia too in these programs, as well as learning disabilities around communication as well. So, the big focus on the tutoring is really math and literacy, but they also go over some homework help as well, depending on the age of the child and what they're doing in school at that time.
So, how do you go about reaching out to the disability population to let them know that these services are available?
Yeah, so we try to reach the population. We do our social media campaigns, and we try our best to connect with the schools and the LSTs, where these children are probably seen most by, and letting the LST know of our programs, and then hopefully they are passed on to the families who would need our services most.
So, in your work, do you ever encounter any myths or stereotypes about learning disabilities?
Oh, absolutely, and I think for the community and what we're trying to do as well is really help people understand what a learning disability is, because I think there is a lot of confusion about learning disabilities, and so we try to help the community understand, you know, an individual with a learning disability has an average or higher IQ. And so they may just struggle in one area and need some accommodations or certain supports in one area. So I think there's a lot of misconception and confusion around the the language of learning disability.
Depending on the type, it can be something that doesn't necessarily manifest in all obvious ways in schools, I'd imagine.
Yes, yeah. So I think too, you know, for individuals as well, we get we also support adults, and so they come in maybe with a psych report or something, and they don't even understand their learning disability. So, you know, breaking that down to them and offering supports on how to support them with whatever they need.
That include things like job support, job coaching, that sort of thing?
Yes, yeah. So that is one of our services for adults. And it's so if a client comes in, you know, evaluating them and supporting where they need. So most of the time when our clients come in, they understand, you know, I might need a little bit of support with this. What can I do to help me? And so that might just be, you know, some job coaching and things like that, maybe some extra training, as well as maybe there is a program out there that could help them support doing their work as well.
So do you ever sit down directly with any employers in terms of job supports and try to find that common ground?
We have sat down with employers in the past, and really, each job and each client, it's really on an individual basis as well. And so it's really evaluating, you know, what the client's skills are, what type of work they enjoy doing, and then what do we need to do to support them in the role they are pursuing. So that kind of job support is varied, and it's a very case-by-case individualized plan on evaluating the client, evaluating the job, and then what can we do to support both sides, so both the employee and the employer, so both are successful.
So, in your time with the association, is there any success story that stands out for you?
Oh, yes, and definitely with employment, that's where I started with the organization, and starting with a client, and so they had a college education, and they were a very smart individual, just needed some support with the interview aspect and connecting with an employer, and so we were able to connect them with an employer, and it started out as a short-term contract, so just a few weeks, just to get him into the working field and get something on his resume, and they totally saw his potential and what he could do, and now he is full-time there, and continuously working there and has been working there for a number of years now. So it's little stories like that and connecting individuals with employers that are in their field. So this was not an underemployment. This was right where he needed to be. This is where he went to school for. And so that's how we got him connected with that employer. And like I said before, he's now working there full time.
So, what are the next steps for the association?
I think for us and our kind of next steps is to really get our name out there so individuals with learning disabilities know who we are and what we do. And we really want to expand our reach in both our programs for the children and as well as our adults programs as well. With employment and COVID going on, there was some hesitancy in going into the workforce, and so our next step now with employment is we want to bring up that program a little bit and help support as many people as we can, as well as with our children's programs, getting our name out there and supporting as many individuals with learning disabilities as we can.
like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Dawn Ireland from CDH International. So, can you tell me a little bit about CDH?
All right. CDH stands for congenital diaphragmatic hernia, which is a structural birth defect that occurs when a baby's diaphragm fails to fully form, and the diaphragm separates the organs in the abdominal cavity from the organs in the chest cavity. So if the diaphragm is open, or a portion of it is open, then organs can migrate up, and then that prevents lung growth. And CDH happens in 1 in every 2,500 children. We do not know the cause, and the survival rate is approximately 50% in higher and middle income countries, and then in lower income countries, it's less than 1%.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the work of CDH International to support those affected?
Yes. We provide everything. We run the patient registry. We have 6,500 patients in that registry, and we created that ourselves. And we work with researchers to help find the cause and best treatments, and hopefully someday soon the prevention of CDH. We provide research grants to universities and labs. We work with them on publications. We speak at medical conferences. We hold a medical conference for patients and their families. We also provide support services, which include online forums, Facebook groups, a one-on-one support for newly diagnosed families, information that's easy to understand in layman's terms, to explain what CDH is and what will happen with surgery and the NICU stay and all the information that a newly diagnosed family needs to cope with CDH. We provide care packages full of information and care items for babies in the NICU with CDH. Weekly newsletters. We have our own radio show where we raise awareness by telling their stories. And anything that we can do with the families, we are there. We also raise awareness. We have buildings light up around the world on Awareness Day for April 19th. We've had legislation passed in the U.S. We hold events and fundraisers around the world. We work with patient families in 84 countries now. I found that out yesterday that we run now up to 84. But we are registered in 7 countries, including Canada. So we encompass everything. Actually, we're spread way too thin because we're doing way too much. But we just try to meet all the needs of the patients. And they have very big needs.
So, how do you go about reaching out to the patients directly to find out when someone's diagnosed and to let them know that your supports are available?
Often they reach out to us because in most countries with HIPAA and GDPR compliance, we're not given the names of newly diagnosed patients. The doctors used to be really good about referring families to us, but they don't do that as much anymore. Families Google. That's mostly where they all find us, is they just Google CDH and then we come up. Or they get on Facebook and look for a support group. But we also reach out to hospitals. We just created a phone app so that families can find us that way. And we just keep our ears open. And if someone hears of a baby that's newly diagnosed, we approach them and see how we can help.
So, in your work, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions about CDH?
Oh, yes. The biggest one is that it's just a hernia. Because of the name, congenital diaphragmatic hernia, people assume it's a small little issue. People go in and get repaired on outpatient basis and everything is fine. And that is not at all what CDH is. It is definitely not just a hernia. It is a life-threatening, severe birth defect. These babies are actually the sickest babies in the NICU, them and cardiac patients. So it is very, very severe. So that's a very big myth that we still have a hard time overcoming because people dismiss it as not that serious or that these kids don't need much help, but it's incredibly serious. And then also we don't have a standard measurement of mortality and morbidity on CDH that's global yet, and that means that we don't have any standard numbers from all the hospitals around the world so that we know the actual survival rate. So when I say survival is about 50%, that's because the hospitals are not measuring by the same measuring stick, so we really don't know. Some hospitals exclude some patients and only include the easy patients. So some only report the ones who don't have other birth defects or survive surgery. And so the measuring sticks are all different shapes and sizes at each hospital. And so one of the big myths is some of the hospitals say they have an 85-90% success rate. And so families don't understand how serious this is. And or they do, and they'll travel across countries to hospitals thinking that they have a bigger success at one place than they do the other. And that is a huge struggle. It's not so much of a struggle in Canada because of your brilliant healthcare system and because you have CDH centers and a standard of care for CDH in Canada. But the U.S. doesn't have that. Many other countries don't have that. And so that's still a very big struggle for us. And then the other myth is that these children go home, that they're healthy. And that's a very big myth. They don't have two healthy lungs. Things like RSV and pneumonia and COVID are a very big threat. And just because they look perfect on the outside, it does not mean that they are perfect on the inside. So
in your time providing supports, is there any success you've achieved in the organization has experience that stands out for you?
Yes, when we started, there was nothing. We're the world's oldest charity for CDH. So we started on my kitchen table with a typewriter and two moms and no internet. And we just started a letter writing campaign. So we literally came from nothing. And now we work in 84 countries and we work with the WHO and the UN and every children's hospital around the world. We created this beautiful community of patient families who support each other and researchers who work with the patients and we provide information to families. When my son was diagnosed, there was nothing, which is why the charity was started. All I had was a crudely drawn a diagram of CDH on a hospital paper towel. That was it. There were no brochures. There was no guide, any charity. That was it. And so families have information now, and they have support. They have other communities near them that they can reach out to and resources that never existed before our charity did. So I can say that everything has changed, and we're very, very proud of that. We have worked very hard. We have a lot farther to go, but we have done quite a lot.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, wonderful.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Hey CGEM listeners, looking for more ways to connect with CGEM programming? Try streaming CGEM through iHeartRadio. Listen online, download the iHeartRadio app, or use your smart speaker. Okay Google, play CGEM on iHeartRadio. No matter where you are, experience CGEM FM on higher ground.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about the Learning Disabilities Association of Windsor, Essex, from Andrea Catalano, and Don Ireland told us a little bit about CDH. In this segment of our show, Monica Niels will be telling us a little bit about her poem about life with MPS.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the poem about having MPS?
Well, living with MPS is definitely a really big challenge, because it's incredibly rare. So there's not a lot of research that has been done. So not a lot of people know much about it. And it affects a lot of younger people as well. So the fact that I'm one of the older people that have lived with it, and I'm doing more research and advocacy with it, we're learning a lot that has to do with the progression of the disease. And that's why I decided to write something like this, because actually it came about, I started creative writing, and I started off with fictional writing to figure out what exactly I enjoyed in life, and it brought me to a competition that's been going on, and it's a competition about poetry about disability. And I figured, you know what? There's a story that needs to be told, and living with something so complex and so, I guess, destructive, it's a story that needs to be shared.
So, what do you hope the community response will be in terms of hearing your story and taking it to heart and just keeping more of an open mind about disabilities?
It is a more rough piece to digest, but I find it's really important because it includes the fight from such a young age, being diagnosed at age 4, and what it's like with parents coming to terms with having a child with a disability, and then trying to grow up as normal as you can. And along with MPS, it does take away a lot of things, such as in high school, I could see, which I can no longer see anymore, and I could take photography, I was doing animation, a lot of physical activities, and over time, MPS takes away your abilities to do things like that, but it also takes away sort of your mental capacity, which is why I started writing as well, because I don't want to lose memories or, you know, the way I feel. And it's important to share that it can be hard to live with something that slowly takes things away piece by piece, but you learn to live day by day and take advantage of the good parts.
So, in your story and in your journey with MPS, what's been the most significant coping mechanism you've used for you and your family? How have you kept hope in your hearts, just pushed forward, as you said?
I'd say it's been a lot of online communication, because especially with losing vision, there's a lot of stuff in the world that becomes inaccessible, and especially with the world nowadays, we're a lot more connected online. So I've been speaking out with other people with disabilities and talking to other creative writers, been trying to explain like about visual impairments, and like people think, oh, we sit in a corner and knit all day. That's not how that works. Like, I use VoiceOver on my telephone to help me write, and I've started to lose function in my arms as well. So I've been learning how to use a new feature called voice control, which is everything you do is controlled by your voice. So that's been a new challenge.
So if you could see anything added to society in terms of their understanding, what would it be?
I'd say some people take life too seriously, especially like, say, oh, it's all right to go watch a movie, you can't stop us. Sometimes it's nice just to have a day when you wake up and say, you know what? I don't feel like complete crap. I'm going to spend the day, I'm going to make a batch of cookies, maybe try and text a friend. That's a good day. Instead of, oh, I don't have the latest iPhone, or think a lot of people sometimes get caught up in the everyday and they forget about the big picture in life.
So, you could send any message to those out there on a similar journey who are just trying to come to terms with their own diagnosis and trying to keep strong. What advice would you give them?
I'd say it is going to be difficult at first, but always know that there are communities out there, and there's a lot of people that would love to speak with you, and just, even not about disabilities, just to get to know you as a person. And that's something very special, because especially with me, disability is a huge part of my life, because it takes away a freedom a lot of people take for advantage. And it also takes away freedom such as going out to a convention if it's not safe, both for my health or if it's just a bad month. But there's always a community. There's always going to be another opportunity to find something new. And there's going to be another day, and it's always going to be sunny after the rain.
Boy.
So, you were saying if anyone wants to reach out to you to find out more about your work, you're on Twitter. So,
yeah, I have a creative writing Twitter. It's called Maria's Writing. MarisWrighting. And I also have all of my stories posted up on my subreddit, which is written on my Twitter as well.
Thank you very much. Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
She's my hero, by the way.
I love the fact that Monica used a poem to talk about her disability. Fact is, for a person with a disability, no matter how they choose to come at it, through academic performance, through acting, through use of language, the ability to share their condition is both a choice and a privilege to society. For when someone can discuss what it's like to have a disability in a relatable, understandable way, it puts a very human face to these matters. And that's what disability life is, human life. A few years ago, for those of you who have heard the show over a long period of time, you might remember a letter written by our friend Carrie Wright, a quadriplegic glide plane pilot, described the total freedom of being up in the air, what it's like just to be at one with what he loves to do, versus that of what it's like on a day-to-day basis, total freedom versus that feeling of just being ruled by society's expectations. People would ask, how can someone with a disability do this? How can they think in such creative terms to find an adaptation? Fact is, they're doing it because it's what they're passionate about. They're no less entitled to achieve than anyone else in society. We can't impose our first glance beliefs on what a person can do. It's up to them. It's up to all of us to find our own potential in this world. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.